And I said, "So where is it actually being shot?" And he went, "Richmond." And I went, "What? Richmond in Surrey? 20 minutes from my house, that Richmond." And then I was like, the bit was between my teeth, and I was like, "I am having this part."
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Awardist podcast, where Entertainment Weekly staff are breaking down this year's Emmys race. And now that the nominations have happened, we have a lot to talk about. And by we, I mean me. I'm senior TV editor Jared Hall, and I am joined by EW critic Kristen Baldwin. How are you, Kristen?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I, you know, had a really fun time in recent days at the Ted Lasso premiere here in Los Angeles.
Fun!
It was really strange going to a live event, but if I was going to go to one, I felt like this was the one to go to.
Absolutely.
And the premiere, yeah, the premiere was all outside. It was on the rooftop of a parking garage at the Pacific Design Center. So you had all these like really cool, colorful architectural buildings around, and you had all these stars, and there were, you know, quite a few stars there. People I didn't even realize was there. Kesha was there. Apparently, sure. She's a huge fan. Yeah. And of course, Jason Sudeikis, Hannah Waddingham, Brett Goldstein, Brendan Hunt, Juno Temple, just so many. Yeah, so many people. Hannah Waddingham, of course, was just absolutely stunning.
I mean, she is a goddess.
She really is. And she's just so cool and chill and funny and talented. And she's just the best. And she had some very kind words to say about you. I know you won't say it here, but that's fine. I'm going to pat your back for her. She had some lovely words because you interviewed her.
Yes, I did. I did. I interviewed her. She, you know, before she was a nominee, now she's a nominee because we knew it was going to happen. Damn it.
Oh, yeah.
And she just is, you know, funny and thoughtful and really candid and has a great sense of humor about everything, including a music video of hers from back in the day, which I found and felt the need to ask her about. And she's really like, you watch her on the show and you think, I would kind of like her to be my best friend.
Yeah.
I would like to hang out with Keely and Rebecca. And then you talk to Hannah Waddingham and you want her to be your best friend.
Yeah, she's just, she's all those things we said. And everyone will get a chance to hear that in your conversation with her a little bit later. Her season one arc was just, it's one of the, I think, the best arcs I've seen in quite a while on a TV show, especially for a supporting character. To go from that, so, you know, she had that kind of vindictive spirit. She wanted to get back at her ex-husband. And then to come around and be like this kind of shining light of the show and, you know, to come around and like see the ways of Ted Lasso, the Ted Lasso way, as it's officially called. It was just really beautiful. And I love what they did with her character throughout that. Hey, should we just keep on going and talk about comedy series?
Let's do it. There's a pretty packed category. Want to let us know the nominees?
Yeah, sure is. Yeah, we were just talking about Ted Lasso. Ted Lasso, of course, is the best comedy nominee, as are Black-ish, Cobra Kai, Pen 15, Emily in Paris, Hacks, The Kominsky Method, and The Flight Attendant. Wow, what a field. And a lot of new entries here because most of those shows, well, some of them weren't around to be nominated last year. Some of them didn't maybe have seasons to be considered. But I love this field for the most part, like 90% of it.
Right. Which will- As you know, certainly I am super excited about Cobra Kai.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, I did legitimately let out a woo on nomination morning when I saw that. Super excited about that. I think it's great that Pen 15 is in there. Obviously,
yes.
PAX was a late entry to the, you know, premiered fairly late in the eligibility period, and it's great to see that in there. We, you know, The Flight Attendant, we feel like it was a given and it had so much momentum. And same with Kominsky Method in that, you know, the voters obviously love that show. Yeah. I mean, I don't even know how to
just
start
say it.
The
just rip the Band-Aid off.
About Emily in Paris. I don't know, Jared. I don't know what to say about this. Like,
So, I mean, look, and I think we've said it here on the podcast before. It's a perfectly pleasant show. I watched. I don't know if enjoyed is too strong of a word, but I watched all of it. And it was just kind of like filler noise in the room, or I just needed something a little more like lighthearted to watch, yes. I suppose, especially, you know, during the pandemic. I don't really know what to make of how the show was nominated. Maybe that's the Netflix money. I don't know. They got a lot of comedy nominations, but
I'm kind of astounded in that, like, sure, you know, Netflix throws a lot of money into their awards campaigns, mm-hmm. and, you know, definitely we see certain shows, maybe, you know, a Ryan Murphy show that nobody really liked, like The Politician getting a nomination. But this, you know, like Darren Star, extremely talented man, but he's not, mm-hmm. you know, a power player at Netflix like Ryan Murphy. So I can't imagine right. that they were doing it to please him. What I will say, as you know, I wrote on EW.com on nominations day, like when you think back to when Emily in Paris arrived in our lives, it was October 2020.
Yeah.
We were 8 months into a pandemic. We were 1 month away from a very stressful and polarizing election. Mm-hmm. And this show was beautiful to look at. And it was yeah. also just, you couldn't believe it was happening. Like you're watching it like this is, you know, she's really annoying, and yet I love all the other characters, and I kind of love that all the other characters hate her, and I enjoy uh-huh. watching the other characters yeah. hate her, and Ashley Park is great, and it was a vacation from the anxiety and yeah. the sadness that we were all yeah. dealing with, so maybe voters remembered that and gave it a shout out. I don't know. I don't get it.
It's one of the best arguments and justifications I've heard. And I don't know, it makes my head hurt a little bit to try to think any deeper on it. Maybe I don't know. It's just good for them is good what I'll them. Say. Good for them. No Long chance shots. In hell they're going to win. Here's yeah. the thing that I was wondering and thinking about this category. Because as you mentioned, Hacks was a, you know, a late entry in the eligibility window. And I started thinking, is that going to give the show the upper edge? And could it actually upset Ted Lasso for the win? But then, as I was at the Ted Lasso premiere the other night, I thought, well, if this new season is good, which starts July 23rd, and everybody will be, in theory, talking about it during the voting window, that could then, you know, bring it right yeah. back. But if second season's not good, uh-oh, that could hurt it. But from all indications and what I've seen so far, I don't think that should be a concern of theirs, that season right. two could I hurt mean, them.
Absolutely. I mean, I think if there was not a new season of Ted Lasso coming, it's possible that Hacks could maintain yeah. and maybe overtake their momentum. But I've seen the first six of Ted Lasso mm-hmm. and I really enjoyed it. I gave it a B+. I think it's, you know, almost as funny as season one, but it's also mm-hmm. entertaining in new ways. It's a little weirder. Yes. It's sweeter. Like, I feel like it's going to be something that people are loving over mm-hmm. the summer, right as they're filling out yeah. their ballots. So
right.
I think
exactly.
I really don't know that anything can beat it at this point.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And really, I have to wonder how much of that July 23rd premiere date, season two premiere date, was by design. It's very smart. Yeah, I don't know. Apple we'll see. But yeah,
about something. What?
I know, right? But yeah, I'm kind of with you. I don't think anything can beat it at this point. I will say I think Hacks is deserving. Sure. But I just don't think it. I don't think. It'll do it. And let's stick with the comedy categories. And since we have Hannah Waddingham on today, let's talk about her category, Best Supporting Actress. Sorry, I should say Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Comedy. Last year, like all of the comedy categories, Schitt's Creek dominated. We don't have to worry about that show this year. But this year we have three nominees from Saturday Night Live, Kate mm-hmm. McKinnon, Cecily Strong, A.D. Bryant, two folks from Ted Lasso, of course, Hannah Waddingham, and the so funny. I love her in everything she's in, Juno Temple. And then from The Flight Attendant, Rosie Perez, and from Hacks, Hannah Einbinder, a newcomer, really got so many people's attention with her really strong performance here, going yes. toe-to-toe, head-to-head with Jean Smart. No easy task. I have to imagine she was just nervous out of her mind, but it doesn't show.
Yeah.
She was great. I I think, like we were saying in the best, you know, in the comedy category, that Ted Lasso can't be beat. I'm not sure Hannah Waddingham can be beat here. And I'm not saying it just because she's on the show today.
Exactly. I really, you know, I think there is so much love for her. There's always love for the SNL ladies, but I feel like they often get nominated in a group and kind of, whether they cancel each other out or, you know, it never really comes to fruition for them. I feel like if anybody could beat Hannah Waddingham, maybe it's the other Hannah, in that, like, if people decide, like, look, okay, we're going to give Ted Lasso the best comedy, maybe we'll throw Hacks, you know, this win. And of course, Jean Smart, which we will talk about in another episode. But I just kind of feel like this is Hannah's to lose, especially like when you think about Schitt's Creek last year, when the Academy, the voters love something, they sometimes like really go all in.
Go all in.
And it sleeps.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that's going to happen with Ted.
Yeah. And I did not pick Annie Murphy to win last year. This is another case where I'm not saying she was undeserving. I just didn't think that was a reality. I didn't think that was going to happen. I think she's very funny, especially in that role. I'll say I think she's very funny. Once a couple of those, I think she was one of the maybe earlier wins, and I was like, oh, well, I think that just told the story for the rest of the night. Yeah, honestly, I just can't wait to see Hannah Waddingham, that beautiful statuesque woman, as we've said, holding that Emmy in September. I'm just kind of putting it out there. I would love to see that image.
Let's manifest it. Let's put it into the universe.
Yeah. I mean, I'm certainly not biased. Love the show. Love all of these women, actually. I mean, they're so great. I just keep staring at the list thinking, can we have ties or triple wins here?
I mean,
of course, Kate McKinnon has a couple trophies to her name. A.D. Bryant is a double nominee, also nominated for lead actress in a comedy. And like I said, Juno Temple, gosh, I've never seen her be bad in something. And every time she's on screen, she makes me perk up a little more. She makes me pay attention because she's so interesting in the choices that she makes. And I love her to bits.
You know, if you fell in love with her on Ted Lasso, I would suggest that people go find the first season of Dirty John on Bravo with Connie Britton and Eric Bana. It's an incredible season and it's so good. But Juno Temple plays Connie Britton's daughter, and it's like a completely different role from Keeley, and she's so great. I remember when I first watched it, I did not know who she was, and I was like, that actress is
literally it's what I was about to say. I didn't even realize it was her when she first popped up. It took me a few minutes really. I was like, wait a minute, that's Juno Temple. And she's also one of those people who's just so funny and fun and to talk to. She is just, you know, cool, you know, down for just a cool conversation about what she does and her shows and her movies. She's been in a lot of great indie films as well, which I would encourage folks to check out. But let's turn it back to her co-star, shall we?
Her character is described as intimidating and very tall, though I will say only one of those things applies to Hannah Waddingham. She's very tall, but she is lovely and warm and very open to having a real in-depth and fun conversation, which I will share with you guys right after the break.
Also,
knowing more about gel coat.
When the fourth round would...
Don't you call in the...
Don't touch that dial. That's right, we're still calling it a dial here because it's Emmy season on The Awardist. With the dazzling Oscar season behind us, we are now turning our attention to smaller screens to track which shows are headed to the podium and which shows stopped us in our tracks. Join me, Jared Hall, Entertainment Weekly's executive editor, as well as EW's TV-obsessed staffers, every Thursday starting April 4th, as we share our opinionated hot takes and insight into the Emmys race. The Awardist will get behind the scenes with the creators and stars themselves during in-depth, can't-miss interviews. Follow the long road to the Emmys with The Awardist podcast, Thursday starting April 4th, on your favorite podcast platform, and be sure to check out more Emmys coverage at EW.com/awardist.
Welcome You thought you were going to hate her on Ted Lasso, and then you fell in love with her on Ted Lasso. Please enjoy my interview with Ted Lasso star Hannah Waddingham. Welcome, Hannah, and thanks for joining us.
Hello, lovely lady.
Nice to see you.
Likewise.
So let's start with Rebecca's arc. It's a great arc. She's pretty much sort of the villain when you meet her, but then she evolves so much by the end, you're really rooting for her. Mm. I read that initially you were a little worried that viewers would hate you.
Yeah, well, not that they would hate me, but that they would think that they had the measure of her very quickly and zone out.
Right.
It was more that. I just thought, oh no, they're just going to think that she's the ice queen that wants to trash the team. How could you be so horrible to Ted? And just think, you know, I'll enjoy the other characters. But because the writing is so clever, even by the end of Ep 1, you're already going, oh, whoa, 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 okay, hold on, hold on. And I even did that as a reader of it when I first got my script. It almost made me cry the second episode with all the biscuits with the boss thing, because I just thought, oh, it's such a lovely touch for Jason and the writers to be getting in. It's like instead of her being told off for being how she was, an arm was already going around her as a character.
Right.
And it made the audience lean into her as well.
And as he says something about, like, she's got some fences up, but I'll jump over them.
Some fences to hop over. Yeah. Gorgeous.
Yeah. And before you got the show, I read that you were looking to find a project that would allow you to stay in London, closer to your family. How surprising was it when a comedy starring American star Jason Sudeikis came your way?
Well, the weirdest thing about it, when I went and did the chemistry read, I still didn't know enough about it to know that it was where it was actually going to be shot. I thought, well, there's every chance because of Jason and his kids, maybe they'll shoot it nearer there. And I said, so where is it actually being shot? And he went, Richmond. And I went, what? Richmond in Surrey? 20 minutes from my house, that Richmond. And then I was like, the bit was between my teeth, and I was like, I am having this part. Because honestly, this is no word of a lie. About 9 months or a year previously, I'd been having a bit of a crappy time, and I went and stood out in my garden, and I thanked the universe for everything that I have in my life so far. And I said, but if I could bother you for something that would really help me out a lot as a single mom, if there's any way I could be so particular, I mean, literally almost verbatim, I was like, could I have something that means I can play several different things in one scene and that doesn't always show that really tall women are harridans and vile and aggressive and horrible? Something maybe that's funny and something that I could pour my heart into and something that will look after me and my little girl in real life. Thank you very much. And then, what-a-pa-da!
So you manifested.
Ask the universe and you shall receive.
You absolutely manifested this
show. I did. I should have done some kind of dance.
Wow. I mean, that's a scary power to have. Good for you.
I mean, it was crazy. I've never done it so much and meant it so much and been so specific. And
it worked.
I mean, maybe it was a fluke, but who knows?
I prefer to believe that you made it happen. So, you know, the show is obviously about a men's football team, but there's this great female friendship, obviously, between Rebecca and Keeley, who is played by Juno Temple. How would you describe their relationship and how it evolves over the season?
I think it's surprising, really. I don't think Keeley or Rebecca have ever had another female in their lives that is so polar opposite, but so utterly completes them.
Yeah.
Unwittingly. And it's rather beautiful how it kind of dribbles into existence. I particularly loved the scene where they're on Rebecca's sofa and Keeley kicks off her shoes. And at first you see Rebecca kind of looking at her like, oh, my God, make yourself at home. And then by the end of it, because Rebecca has shared about herself and Keeley has responded by saying, well, God, if I look like that, I wouldn't hide under a bushel. There is a moment in that where Rebecca realizes that Keeley is a warts and all person. You know, when she puts the cactus down, says, a bit like you. And I remember thinking, that is brilliant, because Rebecca will never have had, I don't think, a woman in her life, certainly of a different generation, which they most definitely are, being absolutely just warts and all with her and loving her anyway. And she finds a new confidant, I think, in that very scene. And funnily enough, Juno and I are exactly that. You know, she's in her early 30s. I'm in my mid 40s. And straight away, it was literally like clunk, done.
And you guys had never worked together before, had never met?
Together, never spoken to each other, never set eyes on each other ever.
And what was your first meeting like?
She went, hi. And I went, hi. Honestly, it was that simple. And we've just been great allies. And between season one and season two, always kept in touch. And then chomping at the bit to see each other when season two started. And it's only strengthened. And, you know, she's, my God, my daughter is in love with her. She calls her Princess Juno. I think my daughter actually thinks that Juno's made out of, like, pixie fairy unicorn dust.
Itself. Who could say? I mean,
honestly,
she is...
when I'm with my daughter and Juno, I totally feel like the third wheel.
Well, so we do get little bits of information about what Rebecca's life was like before she took ownership of AFC Richmond. But beyond that, did you come up with any backstory yourself that you were imagining her life was like?
Yeah, I did. And one of the things really freaked me out because the show didn't really touch on it again. I decided for myself that being the age she is, you know, 46 like me, she would have met, we worked out that if she'd had 12 years of relationship with Rupert, she would have met him when she was kind of maybe like 31, but married at 33. And I decided that because it wasn't written in that they had children, I decided that maybe it was a conversation that they had had. This was like the main thrust for me that I said to Jason. I said, can we at least be on the same page, even if it's not touched upon, that she had always wanted children. Mm-hmm. And Rupert had just said it wasn't for him. And so she had to make that life choice, as so many people do, whether to stick with the person or go for a child. And that very much informed me about her foi d'oeuvre with people in general, that this is something that she's then missed the boat.
Yes.
Probably.
Yeah.
And so she doesn't want to let anyone in because she is dealing with that. And so when we then came to episode 9, and then there's the section where Rupert says, we're having a baby. When I read it, honestly, my jaw nearly hit the floor.
Yeah.
Because I thought it adds such another element, the fact that I have already been playing that without being told that. And so when we're getting into the bit about him saying, and Anthony Head was so brilliant the way he did it, saying, no, I did want children. I just didn't want, honestly, it winded me.
Well, and that's one of the things that's so interesting about Rebecca is, you know, on the surface and in life, she's successful, she's confident, she's a self-assured businesswoman. But you do learn, I believe it's at the gala, you learn that Rupert's really done a number on her self-esteem, like their marriage. And when she says that, it really clicks because you do see that vulnerability in her. So what was that like to play? That seems challenging to kind of balance that, you know, all this stuff is going on inside, but on the outside, you know, she's in charge.
I think because there have been moments in my own life, and I never shy away from talking about them ever in any interview, because I think it's important to show people that you've been through your peaks and troughs yourself. Mm-hmm. And the greatest thing about this job has been that it has allowed me great catharsis from a controlling, verbally abusive relationship that I had that people looking at me wouldn't think I'd experienced. Mm-hmm. So when it got to those scenes in the gala when he's saying, you know, very brave choice with the dress and stuff, I've had that in the past. And also the bit outside the gala when Ted comes to find her and she says, you know, everyone in there will they all love him, and you know, he should be doing the auction, because it's just me that he manages to poke.
Right.
There's the bit about, you know, eat this, wear that, and I listened. That monologue that Jason was tweaking right up to the last minute informed me more than anything else about where I needed to take Rebecca, because that's deep-seated damage that nobody can see.
Yes.
And even though she's a great businesswoman, and even though me in real life, I'm very focused on my career, there have been times when, thank God, I had the focus on my career because everything else was flailing.
Yeah.
So it meant that my ability to understand Rebecca, I could feel her rippling through my bloodstream. And I'm really glad that the writers have continued to give her her ups and downs, and that she's not suddenly in season two this woke, I've got it all sorted out character.
Right.
I was worried about that, but I didn't need to be.
Well, and the cast, you know, is filled with writer, actor, comedians, you know, obviously Jason Sudeikis, Brett Goldstein, who plays Roy Kent, Brendan Hunt, Coach Beard, Nick Muhammad Nate. So
I'm kind of untalented in it. I'm just acting in it.
Well, I was going to say, is it like improv central on the set, or what is it like shooting with these guys?
In the main, I think the script is so beautifully crafted that no, it's not. There is freedom within it, but in general, not. It's beautifully formed already, and you don't really need to do much to it. There is absolute license, especially coming into season two, that you would say beforehand, could this have a bit more of that energy to it? Can I change that word to this? Can I say that sentence in where that one is so I get a better flow into that? Because in season one, this happened and somebody said this to me, and I think she'd remember that. They're totally up for that, which is great.
Right.
And then there are times, hilariously, when I say things like that to Jason, he goes, yeah, no. I'm like, okay.
Sorry?
And I asked, obviously not.
Right. All right. Well, and who would you say, just out of the whole cast, I don't know how anyone keeps a straight face, but who breaks the most?
I'm not going to lie. Possibly when Nick Muhammad and I are together, because I'm meant to be, you know, oh, Nathan, very, you know, haughty and removed from him still. Because, I mean, right. She has learnt his name, but still think, who is this funny little man?
Right, right.
So I would say me and him, because he knows that I've got such a big mouth and I'm such an idiot in real life, that it is quite hard for me to suddenly with him.
Right.
Jason's terrible. When he's in a cheeky pixie mood, just terrible. Him the other day with a character I can't talk about yet, I was literally like, guys, can we just get your coverage done?
Well, yeah, I mean, I would imagine it's a hard set to keep it together. So one of Rebecca's biggest moments, of course, is in episode 7 when she busts out this amazing singing voice at karaoke. When did you first learn that you would be singing on the show?
Pretty much when I got the script for Ep 7. And I said, so why is the football club owner singing? And Jason said, why not?
All right.
And then he got serious with me and he said, because I was complaining about the song choice. I was like, I, as a singer, I've avoided this song in concert since it came out. All over the world, I'm happy to do any other song, but I was always like, no, no, no. I don't want to sing Let It Go. I don't want to sing Let It Go because, one, everyone does it in auditions, and two, it's a beast. So, no, thank you.
Yes.
And he said, he was really cool. He was like, okay, you know, stroking his Ted Tash as usual. If you can go and find me a song that's more perfect, you know, in the Venn diagram of where we are in the show, in the episode, for your character, for my character, for your reference to your goddaughter, for your reference to your friend, then off you pop. And I was like, fine, I will. And I went off to my trailer and was thinking, what am I going to do? And of course, I couldn't find one. but I did make a deal with him. I was just like, but can it not outstay its welcome because she is a football club owner. She's not a singer. So that's a fine line for me to try and find and tread anyway.
Right.
And he said, don't worry about it. I get what you're saying. You don't want to look like, look, this is me singing.
Yes.
So it was good that the brilliant juxtaposition, of course, he had it all mapped out already, which is so annoying that he always knows what he's talking about with this.
Right.
And you get the verse and the chorus and then you're out because then you're following Ted's journey right. into his anxiety attack. So, and the most amazing thing for me was that the two writers of Let It Go contacted me and said that they loved it and that that's how they imagined it.
Oh my gosh.
What?
What?
As a musical theatre girl was just insane.
I was going to say, I mean, obviously you've sung on stage many, many, many times, but
yeah.
Is it a different challenge when you're, you know, on a set in a crowded room? What was that like?
Well, because of course I'm used to just singing live and my mic will be here or, you know, around here, one of those mics or whatever. But with this, I just had like some crappy old genuine like karaoke mic and a rubbish system.
Right.
And I was a bit like, can I please at least have a better microphone? And they were like, oh my God, why have we got a singer doing this? I was like, never. I can't be on international television sounding like I'm singing into a paper cup. Come on. But they gave me a different thing. But in general, it's that weird thing because when you have an audience, you're that, whereas you need to make sure you're making it small enough for us to be talking,
mm-hmm.
but also big enough to look like there's a performance in it. So it's a weird, weird balance. And I'm not entirely sure I've got the balance right yet. But,
right.
They're very lovely wheeling me out to sing.
Were you singing live or were you?
Oh my God, all day. Kristen, all day, like for hours and hours, yes.
How is your throat? Oh, my gosh.
Well, thankfully, I'm used to it, so it was fine. But,
yeah. But
they did keep saying to me, once they'd done my coverage, they were like, do you want us to put it on playback for Jason's coverage? But, you know, I'm a firm believer in being a team player, and I wanted him to feel it live for him to get where he needed to. So, yeah,
right.
I was singing that song for about 10 hours that day.
Oh, my gosh. Well... Any chance Rebecca will pick up a microphone in season 2?
Kristen, don't do that. Honestly, you lot are so funny. You're like, I'm just going to slide this in like a side order of broccoli. Just going to gently ask this question. I'm not telling you that.
All right.
Maybe not. Who knows?
You're going to love this next question then. I recently discovered...
Yes.
That you sang a pop song called Our Kind of Love that made the UK singles charts in 2000. And I know this isn't really part of Rebecca's backstory, but I would love the idea of like the team finding this video on YouTube. And wondering like Rebecca's previous life. Any chance of that happening?
I couldn't believe it got into the hit parade, as my mom would say. Because it was from a musical called The Beautiful Game, and it was like the lead song from the show and was written by Lord Andrew Lloyd Webber and Ben Elton. And then it suddenly charted because it had been produced by Celine Dion's producer of My Heart Will Go On. So
They'd
obviously done a lovely thing to it. Yeah, it was all a bit odd at the time. Yeah. Like my minimal foray into being a pop star.
You got to shoot a video. It's on YouTube now.
I know. I look about 12 in it. Yeah, don't encourage them. I mean, you tell the writer's room that and they're just going to be like, where is this video?
Yes. I can't say that I won't be tweeting the video out and sort of suggesting. So, okay, but I will respect your wishes but it is great.
I love that you told everyone the name of the song anyway.
Right, everyone's just going to go Google it now. Just type it into YouTube. Beyond the singing, what would you say was the most challenging scene for you over the course of the season to get right?
This, you mean season one?
Season one, yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't. Not because I'm terrible. I'll be like, a massive gem will come out.
Right.
What's the most difficult scene to shoot? probably the part of that scene continuing on from what we were saying earlier about the baby scene with Rupert.
Yes.
Probably the continuation on from that, walking into Ted's office and saying it was me, it was all me. Because I think there's a fine line between being maudlin and self-absorbed, and you could easily overplay that. And so I was acutely aware of, I wanted to feel like she was purging poison.
Yes.
That had been rotting her system. I think she thought that Ted was going to say, "You're an awful human being, I'm out of here." And she would have thought, yes, right.
Right.
But I was acutely aware of wanting to get the tone right so that it allowed Jason then to pick up and take Ted where he needed to go in response.
Right.
So I just really felt how delicate that was.
Yes, it was. And it was because she'd been putting it off the whole episode too. Yeah. And then just sort of driven to this moment.
Yeah. And I think it's so clever the way they write it, that it suddenly gets to the point where she can't feel any lower.
Right.
But she just thinks, right, it's now, we're doing it now, because you've got to stop.
Right. No, it's so perfect. It's such a great moment for the character.
I worry that I will never in my career get, you know, the scene when the funniness of the scene when she's trying to confess to Ted.
Yes.
Then he's rewinding out of the scene, then Rupert coming in, all of that, then turning on my heels and walking downstairs, going through the locker room and all of that into that. And then Ted, I mean, that whole thing feels like a river to me.
Yeah.
And seeing all of that piece together, which we shot on different days, of course.
Oh, of course.
And then the coverage of Anthony and the coverage of myself at different times. And Anthony had stayed when he didn't need to. When I turn on my heels and go to walk down to Ted, he'd already been cleared for the day, he'd already wrapped for the day, and he stayed to help me get back to it. And I will never forget that. That is teamwork.
Oh my gosh. Teamwork makes the dream work.
Doesn't it? That's what we're talking about.
So Rebecca has fabulous style, obviously, similar to yourself. Was there anything that you wanted to, pinch on your way off, way home from set?
I get everything tailored within an inch of its life, not only because I think Rebecca would be that tailored, but also because I just think, no one else would be able to wear it.
Smart.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite look of hers?
From season one, I would say just because when I put it on now, in fact, I've worn it once in season two as well as a nod to the moment in season one, the aubergine suit, trouser suit with the pale V-neck top, because it feels like that is her in proper, calm, Rebecca Welton work mode.
Yes.
Don't F with me.
And I wear it's a power suit for sure.
Yes. I specifically said to our wonderful costume designer, Jackie Levy, that I wanted to wear it then. And I didn't even barely need to finish my sentence. She understood why I wanted to wear it again at this particular moment in season two.
Excellent. And I know, so season two is in production.
Yeah.
What's it been like filming now, sort of post, but not really post COVID, in the pandemic era, where I assume you have to take some precautions since season one was filming at a totally pre-COVID time?
Yeah. At first, I thought it was going to be troublesome, difficult, and not funny.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing of, Apple and Warner Brothers are absolutely first class with the way they travel us all in. We're being tested all the time. But even though we are being tested three times a week, we are all, myself and Juno and Sarah Niles, our lovely new companion for season two, we all have visors,
mm-hmm,
to not screw up the hair and makeup. And the boys have to keep on their masks loosely until the cameras go up.
Right.
So it is absolutely stringent testing and following everything to the letter. So the one thing we all feel is exceptionally safe.
Yes.
And I think because we all got to know each other so well last year, the funny hasn't gone, because as soon as you get all of us in the same room together, it's like, as I was saying to Jason early on, it's like putting on an old comfy cardigan. We just, yeah. we just know how to play rhythms with different people, and it's been absolutely blissful. And we are about 3 weeks off wrapping season two, and I already have anxiety tummy from not wanting it to finish.
Oh, and I know, you know, you can't really get, you can't give away any spoilers, but just vague, general, get us excited preview. How would you sort of obliquely tease Rebecca's journey in season two?
Ooh. What I will say is that my main concern was that she was suddenly going to be all sorted, all sweetness and light in a way, and with no ups and downs. And I was thinking, I hope that doesn't happen. We're only meant to be like five months on. And of course, the writer's room have treated her with the absolute love that they did in season one. And I had nothing to worry about. And she ambles through various things that are thrown at her, both good and bad, in the usual kind of some days elegant, some days not so elegant fashion. And I can't wait to start shooting season three.
Oh my gosh, exciting. Well, it's been a joy talking to you as per usual. So thank you so much. And I look forward, I cannot wait to see the new season this summer.
Neither can I. I'm going to be like that.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, lovely.
Kristen, I just can't let it go how great that interview was. I don't. Yes. I won't sing it for you. I'll leave the singing to Hannah. But really, that was such a wonderful interview. No shame.
Oh my gosh!
I worked on a second one.
I'm like, you threw in a second one. It's two for one. I got two terrible, wonderful puns for one. Yeah. I appreciate.
I mean, if folks don't know, of course, she was the shame nun in Game of Thrones.
Yes.
But yes.
And I mean. Let's discuss Range, by the way. Shame none to Hannah Waddingham on, on Ted Lasso. Incredible. Yeah,
I don't know how they thought, hey, get us that woman to play this boss lady. But it was a brilliant move on their part.
Yes.
Really so smart. Maybe one of the best castings I've seen in a long time.
I think we can manifest that image you mentioned earlier of her on stage holding Lady Emmy.
Yes.
As Conan O'Brien tried to make happen when he hosted the show those many years ago.
Yeah, wish that would have stuck. Alas, it did not. But you know what is going to stick? Us, right here on the Awardist Podcast. We have several more episodes to come throughout Emmy season, so be sure to follow, subscribe, like if you like what you're hearing. You know, because we don't want you to miss an episode. And really, we're here for you. We're here for all of you to continue to break down this really exciting season of TV, because there was a lot of good TV in the last year. Thank goodness. Productions were able to resume. So anyway, and also be sure you follow us on social media. We want to hear from you, what you think about the episodes. If there's someone you would love to hear from, be sure to shout it out to us. You can find me on Twitter at Jared Hall. And Kristen, where are you?
I'm at Kristen G. Baldwin. When in doubt, tweeting about The Bachelor.
Of course. And there are some great takes on there. All right, everyone, that's it for this episode. We'll see you next week.